Oakland-based writer Maxine Hong Kingston is one of the best-known writers in the U.S. She grew up in Stockton, California, one of eight children of Chinese immigrants. In China, her father was a teacher and her mother a midwife and doctor. In Stockton, her family ran a gambling house and later a laundry. Kingston attended Edison High School, and during this time, her first published work appeared in the Girl Scouts magazine, The American Girl. Her best-known book, The Woman Warrior, weaves Chinese myth and folk tales with stories told to her by her mother and her own experiences. It won the National Book Critics Circle Award for Nonfiction. Her second book, Chinamen, won the National Book Award. She received the National Medal of Humanities from President Bill Clinton and the National Medal of Arts from Barack Obama. She initiated a writing group for war veterans and others touched by war and edited an anthology entitled Veterans of War, Veterans of Peace. Her most recent books are To Be the Poet and The Fifth Book of Peace. Maxine and I will be in conversation this coming Sunday at the last of the Peace Talk series hosted by Women's International League for Peace and Freedom at the Ed Roberts campus here in Berkeley. Maxine will reflect on war, peace, immigration, and writing. Here's a little preview of that conversation recorded last week in our studio. The Woman Warrior is reputed to be the most frequently taught book in U.S. universities. And President Obama mentioned that it was one of the books that he put on his Kindle for Malia. How does that make you feel?
Oh, that makes me feel really good. And actually, I think I'm the living writer whose work is most taught. So okay. I don't think this would include, you know, I'm not in competition with Shakespeare or Homer. It makes me feel good that my thoughts and feelings and words are getting out there, and that I participate in the dialogue that's going on in our civilization.
The Woman Warrior is a genre that didn't really exist when you wrote it. It's what we would now call creative nonfiction. At the time, it seemed like people didn't quite know how to categorize it. Some called it autobiography. Some called it myth. Some called it fiction. Some called it nonfiction. How did it come to you? How did you get the idea for how to write these stories?
You know, I did not start by finding a category. There's an edition of The Woman Warrior in which it says nonfiction on the front cover and it says fiction on the back cover. And
so
I mean, to this day, people don't know how to categorize it. And the way it came to me was just that I wrote the way I think. And maybe one reason that that I can be in that wide border between fiction and nonfiction is that I come from a people who talk story. We tell our dreams. We wake up in the morning, and everybody tells what their dreams are. I visited my long-lost aunt in Singapore and got off the plane and saw her, and she said to me, "Well, what's your mother dreaming about?" And I'm supposed to know that. And I was really proud of myself. I knew what she was dreaming about. I could tell her. So if I'm going to write a book about these people, I have to know the fictional lives that they make up for themselves. There's a dream life, but also so many of my family, like my mother and father, both illegal aliens, illegal immigrants. And I wanted to tell their story. So how can I tell their story without telling all the stories that they made up? There's the actual story of how they illegally came, but they made up stories to tell the to tell the authorities. So in order to write their story, I would also include the fictions that they were making up about themselves. The woman warrior starts out with a sentence, "Don't tell anyone, my mother said, what I am about to tell you." And then she tells me a horrible family secret. So as a writer, I have to tell everything. And I have to break these taboos. And so so much of The Woman Warrior, and also China Men, it's like telling the stories that are forbidden and taboo, but also they are stories that nobody else knows, and they ought to be out there in the culture. But in order to do that, a lot of times these are stories that I could get in trouble for, and I could also put other people in danger. So I invented a way of being able to tell stories, but also to keep asking the question, is this true or not?
So how did you start writing?
Oh, I think I've always been writing. Sometimes I've thought that I was writing for 3 previous incarnations. It always feels like I have always been, if not writing, I would be talking story. And my mother said that I was talking as I was being born.
Wow.
Yeah.
Did your parents know that you were writing, and did they approve of your writing?
When I was first writing, I felt that it was a secret thing to do. I would hide, and I would find small spaces for myself. And I even made up a secret language and alphabet so that nobody could read it. And when my parents ever noticed that I was writing, I would just let them know I was doing my homework.
How long did you work on The Woman Warrior?
The Woman Warrior was very fast. It only took 3 years. From beginning to end and the rewriting, everything was very fast. At the same time, I was teaching at a boarding school, which took up all the time. And every book that's come after has taken longer and longer. And so I think what must have happened is that that first book was a lot of pent-up stuff, and that it was already subconsciously being created.
Did your parents know what you were doing? I mean, because so many of the stories in the book are ones that you inherited from your mother. Did she know what you were writing? And, you know, the idea that you start out by saying, by quoting her saying, "You must never tell anyone this." Did you tell her what you were doing?
No. And she and my father didn't know what I was writing until the books came out in Chinese translation, and which made me really nervous. And so my parents read those early books in Chinese, and they said, "Oh, this is so accurate. How did you know?" And they were saying that these were good books. And what I think happened was that the Chinese did not translate it the way I wrote it. I write in a very strange style, very experimental, modern, postmodern, and when they do these quick translations, they just make it like a straight-out plot, like a soap opera, and I don't think that the strong feelings, the anger that I put in the woman warrior was there. And so my parents just thought it was a good story.
One of the things that the woman warrior explores, which I think not that many books have done, is the ways in which sexism and patriarchy are passed down from mother to daughter, the role that women play basically in enforcing patriarchy. Was it hard to put that out in the world? Like at that time, this was the mid-70s, late-70s, when feminism was just kind of breaking through and we were all about, you know, loving each other, loving ourselves, and I am woman, hear me roar. Was it difficult to put out that picture of women as not so heroic in the story?
Well, you know, look at my mother. I mean, she was a doctor in the 30s. And, I mean, she went to medical school. And then she was a doctor in these villages. And yet she can say to me, well, why don't you learn to type so you can be a secretary? You know? Part of it has to do with, I think, coming to America. She sized up this place, and she didn't. She couldn't use her medical degree when she got here, and so she sized things up. And what can you possibly be? I think you could maybe be a secretary. It hardly has anything to do with feminism. When Woman Warrior was published, so the feminist movement was really going. And of course, I'm a feminist. But I thought to myself, I don't want this book to be received as a feminist book. I don't want it to be reviewed as a feminist book, because I wanted to break out of categories. Of course, it did come out as a feminist book. Ms. and Gloria Steinem, everybody just supported this book, which was good because it did not get pigeonholed as simply feminist. And it even broke out of the ethnic studies category. It broke out of anthropology, which was another category that people try to shove it into. So I worked hard on trying to not let it be ghettoized into any one category. And it has been categorized, and it would break out of each one. So I think that says a lot for reviewers, critics, and readers.
I mean, speaking of critics, you encountered some pretty harsh criticism at times, especially from some other members of the Chinese American community who claimed that you falsified history, or they didn't like the type of history that you were portraying. Did that bother you, or were you able to just kind of shrug it off?
Oh, it bothered me a lot. And it was not a lot of people in the among the Chinese Americans. It was just a few male critics, and they were very powerful, and they tried to define what Chinese American art was. At the time, there wasn't a lot of it, so it was the beginning of a whole new movement, and they claimed that I had gotten it wrong. The main thing that they said was wrong was that I was charging Chinese culture as being sexist. And they were claiming that it was not, that I was giving the wrong view of what a Chinese-American man was. Of course I was right.
I'm curious if you ever talked to Alice Walker about this experience, because it sounds so much like the reactions The Color Purple and some of her other work.
Exactly. And it's exactly the same as what the Latina writers are getting also from the macho men. Alice Walker and I have mentioned it to each other, but we didn't need to talk about it at length because it's there. And there's no sense in arguing with those men. And I also think that the whole thing has calmed down.
You're listening to Women's Magazine on KPFA 94.1 FM and online at kpfa.org. I'm Kate Raphael. I'm speaking with the acclaimed writer Maxine Hong Kingston.
You grew up in Stockton, California. Talk about how racism affected you in your early life.
Oh, my. Well, what comes to mind right away, I remember walking to the public library, and it was Brotherhood Week. And I guess I was about 9 years old. And this white brother on a bicycle tried to run me over.
Whoa.
And all this time I'm thinking, how ironic. This is Brotherhood Week. Growing up in Stockton, we were very mixed racially. And then coming to Berkeley, I was a freshman, 17 years old, 1958. I saw segregation for the first time. You're assigned a roommate that's the same race as you. And then you can see all the clubs and everything. They're separated by race. You could see everybody hanging out with people of the same race. We'd never had that in Stockton.
Interesting. Yeah, so you were starting Berkeley then, just before the free speech movement and just before the Vietnam War began. You know, the Vietnam War was so important to your generation and my generation, to all of us. Do you feel like as an Asian American, it affected you differently?
Oh, yeah, it does. Because, like, my brothers were in Vietnam, and they are Asians fighting a war against other Asians. You had all kinds of stories about, you don't get captured because they're going to skin you alive. And then there's the racism within our own military. I know a Chinese-American nurse who was over there, and she was on our own military bases. She'd be taken as a prostitute. It was different for Asians.
You also did a series of workshops with veterans and produced an anthology out of that called, I think, Veterans of War, Veterans of Peace. So where did you get this idea, or how did you decide to start doing that work?
You know, our group is still meeting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think we were like 25 years old. I started these workshops after the Oakland-Berkeley Hills fire in 1991, and that was when I lost my writing, I lost the house. My father just died also. And so I was thinking, how does one create again after that? And one of my ideas was to not work alone anymore, but to work in community, to write in community. And the people I wanted to work with were war veterans. And so that was how we started, and this whole thing has grown and continued since then.
You mentioned about your parents having been undocumented, come to this mm-hmm. country without papers. And I wonder how you feel like their experience was different from the experience that people are having now as undocumented immigrants. I mean, we just heard that the president's likely to overturn DACA, the mm-hmm. Protection for young people whose parents brought them here without permission.
My parents were different from a lot of people now because they were heavily documented aliens. They found ways to get fake papers. And I just recently got the documentation from my mother's time on Angel Island. There's 50 pages of documents. And another way in which Chinese Americans were different is that, you know, they were invited to be here. There were recruiters in China saying they needed workers for the railroads. And my grandfather and a lot of people came. And as soon as the railroads were done, they were lynched and burned out. And then came specific laws that said that Chinese could not come, and so people broke those laws. Just my father stowed away and came through New York, and my mother had fake papers which my father won at the gambling table. So there's this whole tradition of just crossing these borders. There were promises of amnesty. And I remember the community discussing, well, shall we turn ourselves in? Is this the right time? My mother and father always said, don't do it. This isn't, don't do it, because they're going to use it against us. And so they never did.
Have you maintained relationships with China? Like, did you go there and meet people to talk about your books? And, you know, what's your perception of Chinese society now?
Well, I have, yes, kept lots of contact. I have cousins back in our villages, and I've met them. I've also talked to many literary people, my publishers, my editors. There was a scholar, literary person, who said to me, you know, your fifth book of peace is never going to be published here. And I wanted to know why. He says, it's because you mentioned the Dalai Lama. And I was really surprised at myself, because stuff went through my mind. One was, it's just a little bit about him. Maybe I can just take it out. And I actually thought that. I did not say it. And it went through my mind. I could write it a little differently, because this is what I do anyway. I kind of sneak things through. And so, but I did not do that.
So did you have something that you wanted to read?
Yeah. So I think I'll just read a little parts of this demonstration and this time when the United States was getting ready for shock and awe leading up to the war in Iraq, 2003, and this was International Women's Day in 2003. In San Francisco, we were a peace dragon with 100,000 pairs of feet walking up and down the city hills. From rooftops and balconies rained rice as at weddings, and water on the summer's day and rose petals and red and motley confetti. In Washington, D.C., on International Women's Day 2003, our peace dragoness was a mile long, winding our way to the White House. 1 million people marched in Rome, and thousands of Shiite and Sunni Muslims together in Baghdad. Oh, democracy, I will make inseparable cities with their arms about each other's necks. This last quote was from Walt Whitman, and so he was writing that during the Civil War. Okay, so then we march on Pennsylvania Avenue, and we were told by the park police that only 25 of us could be in front of the White House. And so then we get to the front of the White House, and then all the Metropolitan Police and the tech squad and the SWAT teams and the federal police, they're all lined up, and they're all along the street, and there's 25 of us women dressed in pink in front of the White House. Two grandmothers ago, our ancestresses chained themselves to this black iron fence. I held its bars in my hands, laid my face against the barricade, and felt tears rise. The other women were crying too, and cheering and dancing. Now the police saw we had unambiguously broken a law. Time to start the arrests. All the police came to attention. The rangers blocking the left side of the street, the tax squad the right, and the city cops in a blue line facing us, the width of the street between. On the White House roof, a man in uniform aimed a high-powered, long-range sharpshooter rifle at us. He aimed it, put it down, aimed, put it down. A van drove into the cordoned area. I think the insignia on it said federal prison. Two or three cops unfolded a tarp and taped it onto the side of the van, covering over the words. I got afraid. They're hiding the place where they would take us. They would disappear us. They're going to drive us through the streets of the Capitol in an unmarked white vehicle. No one would know what became of us. Keep singing. Keep loving. Say in unequivocal words, I love you. Here, I love you, Maxine. Oh, it's Terry Tempest Williams that kept putting her arms on my shoulder and saying, I love you, Maxine. The Metropolitan Police, the men stood in one line formation. The women, we, the demonstrators, drew one another close. We were a bouquet knot of pink roses. How can it be that all the cops are men and all for peace women? I can't live in such a world. I don't want to keep living out the myth that men fight and women mother. We regressed the junior high dance. One boy crossed the wide floor, chose one girl, escorted her back to the other side where he arrested her. My wife is gonna kill me, said a black cop. I'm arresting Alice Walker. Don't hold hands with me, said a white cop, shaking off his partner, who was smiling up at him. Don't take my arm, either. They had each one of us stand by herself alongside the van and took our pictures. Quit smiling. What are you smiling for? This is an arrest. This is your mugshot, not your prom photo. Then a few days later, shock and awe started. A-Day hit Iraq with 300 to 400 satellite-guided missiles. On the second day, round-the-clock bombing, another 300 to 400 smart bombs. We had used all our arts, sung, danced, walked about as goddesses, full body puppets on stilts, in pink and red garments of flowing silk, bent down in mercy to children. We staged a theater of peace, recited poems, and did not stop our country from war.
That was Maxine Hong Kingston, author of the classic book The Woman Warrior, as well as Chinaman, the Fifth Book of Peace, and several other books. She is a recipient of the 2015 National Medal of the Arts. You can hear much more from Maxine this Sunday from 3 to 5 p.m. at the Ed Roberts campus here in Berkeley, right at Ashby BART station. I will be in conversation with her there as the fourth and final peace talk hosted by the Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, East Bay and San Francisco branches. WILPFEastBay.org is where you can get more information about that event.